This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world development. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. And coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the demand for basic commodities has sharply risen. So a lot of people are coming to buy in bulk and we actually are running out of stock.
That's a shop owner in Harare talking about panic buying as Zimbabwe's currency crisis worsens. Details coming up.
Also, the most wanted militant in eastern Libya has been captured, and officials say a bus driver apparently lost control on a steep slope in western Kenya and overturned, killing at least 50 people.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the self-styled Libyan National Army has captured former Egyptian Army officer Hisham El Ashmawi, one of the most wanted militants in eastern Libya. The Cairo government accuses the former Special Forces officer of masterminding terrorist attacks in Egypt and organizing the insurgency in northern Sinai. In addition, this week, the Egyptian army says its forces killed 10 terrorists in Al Arish, the capital of northern Sinai. The army says its campaign in Sinai killed 52 militants in recent days, bringing the death toll to at least 509 since February. Professor Gaudat Bagat of the National Defense University in Washington spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shanawi. He says the arrest of El Ashmawi could provide Egypt with valuable information, but the military campaign is not the best option to counter terrorism in Sinai.
The Egyptian government has celebrated this arrest and has launched a very aggressive campaign against terrorists in Sinai. And I believe it is important to arrest any accused terrorist. But at the same time, defeating terrorism is not only by military means. There is much more. And I believe it is important not to over-celebrate, overplay this achievement and just understand that there is a lot of work that needs to be done.
But a military court sentenced him to death last year in absentia following his conviction of terror charges. Is it better for the Egyptians to get information from him or just execute him?
I'm sure the Egyptian government is trying to get as much information as they can. And at the end, I believe he will be executed. After getting all the information the Egyptian government can get out of him. But also, most of the time when terrorists are arrested, the organization changes everything because they understand that he will be under a lot of stress to give information. So there is certain steps organizations take to make sure that whatever information they have will not be disclosed to the authority.
The Egyptian army also announced today that its forces killed 10 terrorists hiding in Al Arish, the capital of northern Sinai. And the army said on Monday its operation in Sinai killed 52 terrorists, bringing the total of Islamist militants number killed since February to at least 509, according to military statements. Would that indicate a real success for the military campaign in Sinai?
We cannot measure success by how many terrorists are killed. At the end, it is a long-term process, and winning the war on terror will not only be by military means, but Egypt has a long way to go. And for his credit, President al-Sisi has promised to reintegrate Sinai in the Egyptian society and try to develop the region. So I believe just counting how many terrorists the Egyptian government killed is not the right way to measure it. And in my mind, not only it will take a long time, but we have to live with some level of terrorism. No country will be completely free of terrorism anytime soon. And the most people can hope for is to lower the number of crimes, to lower the number of terrorist attacks.
So how differently you see that Egypt should handle the security threat in northern Sinai, which you said not only by military means?
The real achievement is to initiate serious economic and social development in Sinai. And honestly, they have done very little. To a great extent, development takes time and does not make headlines to open school or hospital or to provide jobs. It is not as juicy as killing terrorists. So the right thing is to look at the big picture and focus on socioeconomic development, political integration of Sinai. This will take a long time, but this is the right approach.
That was Professor Gaudet Bagat of the National Defense Ministry in Washington. He spoke with our colleague, Mohammed El-Shenawi.
Officials say a bus driver apparently lost control on a steep slope in western Kenya and overturned, killing at least 50 people. The pre-dawn crash occurred on the highway linking the capital Nairobi with the city of Kisumu. Photos of the scene showed that the roof of the bus had been ripped off. Passengers' possessions littered the countryside. President Uhuru Kenyatta called it a catastrophic incident. The death included at least 7 children. Police say the bus didn't have a license to run at night. A World Health Organization report from 2015 ranked Kenya's roads among the most dangerous in the world.
In Zimbabwe, rising inflation is driving up prices and causing a shortage of fuel and basic goods. Many Zimbabweans worry this could be a return to 2008. That's when inflation shot up, the local currency lost its value, and many consumers lost their savings as the government dollarized the economy. Reporter Kuzayi Zvinavashi has details.
Long winding lines of cars have become the order of the day as consumers wait to purchase scarce petrol and diesel at gas stations throughout Zimbabwe. Professor Ashok Chakravarti explains the key issues behind the situation.
The bottom line is that our imports are much more than our exports. So any dollars that come into our country legitimately, it's used to finance imports.
Because of this, and other factors, the demand of the US dollar by Zimbabwean businesses to restock has eroded the value of the bond notes. They are a surrogate currency introduced by the central bank 2 years ago to trade at par with the US dollar but only circulate within the country. Prices have gone up on almost everything, and there are new fears they will continue to rise. This has resulted in panic buying countrywide. Darlington Tsozo is a shop owner in Harare.
What has been happening is the demand for basic commodities has sharply risen. So a lot of people are coming to buy in bulk, and we actually are running out of stock in terms of basic commodities.
The introduction of the separate accounts by the Reserve Bank to cater for the foreign currency and local surrogate currency has amplified people's panic. In 2008, when the government dollarized, bank accounts with Zimbabwean dollars were wiped clean. Those memories are still fresh. Prices are rising on almost all goods and on transport fares. A majority of shops demand foreign currency or take local electronic transfer at a higher premium. Peter Mutasa is the head of the Zimbabwe Congress for Trade Unions.
We are chiefly frustrated with the policy directive of separating the foreign currency account, which amounts to treachery by the monetary authorities.
Mutasa says the new stance and introduction of new taxes disadvantages the public. In response, he says the union will be taking appropriate action.
The ZCTU is therefore calling on all Zimbabweans to join the ZCTU in national demonstrations across the country on Thursday, 11 October 2018, against the ill-advised measures that have a devastating effect on the lives of Zimbabweans.
The government remains somewhat tight-lipped on the panic buying that prevails, but state publications are painting a different picture, one that says panic buying is uncalled for. Meanwhile, consumers say they see no alternative. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zwinawashe from Harare.
With the spread of Ebola rising again in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, officials are moving to counteract resistance to measures aimed at quelling the outbreak. They are supplementing education efforts by banning people from harboring possible patients and ordering safe burials instead of traditional funerals that include touching the diseased and potentially spreading Ebola. Last week, villagers attacked three volunteers for the Congolese Red Cross who were helping with the burial of an Ebola victim. The area is an opposition stronghold where mistrust of the government and its activities are strong. Some politicians have been accused of fanning those flames with elections looming in 2 months. The World Health Organization had been hopeful that the 2-month-old outbreak was being brought under control before an armed attack in Beni, the center for aid efforts, forced health workers to stay indoors for several days. The number of new cases has been rising since then.
In Rwanda, a special Senate commission in charge of analyzing the problems of historically marginalized Rwandans has urged the Minister of Education to make sure those communities have the same access to schools as other citizens. Eugene Uimana has details from Kigali.
Officially, they are called historically marginalized Rwandans, a term for the community of Abatwa people. The community normally earns living by making pottery because the loss of forest means traditional hunting isn't possible. Government data show the community in general is impoverished and declining. Omutkwa describes conditions at her home. He says, we sleep lying down on leaves of trees. There's no mattress, no blankets. Look, this kitenge is what covers me. The Abatwa or Batwa are one of the world's oldest ethnic groups. They live in Central Africa, Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, and the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. In Rwanda, however, the government does not use the term Abatwa in its efforts to promote ethnic unity. In 2007, the Senate created a special commission to address the community's problems. Tuesday, the commission held a new session to look at education issues for the community. Senator Uwimana Konsole is its president, and she says one finding is that very few members of the community attend high school or university, despite more than a decade of effort. She says if there had been intensive follow-up, today there should be many students at university and in secondary school. She says that the education minister explains the government policy that all children have to go to school, but the commission finds it unjust to consider historically marginalized children generally with the other Rwandans. Education Minister Eugene Mutimula told the commission Tuesday he recognizes the problem. He says that in conjunction with other government institutions, the ministry is working to bring all children into schools.
And so we have a lot of programs, mainly sensitization, working with the local government, working with the secondary education officers, working with the district education officers and other people on the ground so that we ensure that pupils and students who don't access education are able to access education.
A 2011 study showed the population of the historically marginalized Rwandans, or Abatwa, had fallen to about 36,000 from over 50,000 before 1994. The Senate Commission says much of the decline is because of poor living conditions and high child and maternal mortality. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Hayes Wuhib, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The most wanted militant in eastern Libya has been captured. Officials say a bus driver apparently lost control on a steep slope in western Kenya and overturned, killing at least 50 people. And in Zimbabwe, rising inflation is driving up prices and causing a shortage of fuel and basic goods. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
In South Sudan, rebels of the SPLM-IO say government troops attacked areas in the former Unity State today. A rebel spokesman contacted VOA's South Sudan in Focus team to say government forces attacked three villages. Colonel Dol Koryam Lingling says the South Sudan government is violating the September 12 peace deal. He spoke with VOA from a village called Pada. South Sudan in Focus tried to contact South Sudan's military spokesman, Major General Lol Rual Koang, but calls did not go through. His deputy did not answer repeated calls and did not respond to a text message from our reporter.
Obstetric fistula can be a silent tragedy for millions of girls and women in developing countries. It is estimated that more than 2 million young women live with untreated obstetric fistula in Asia and sub-Saharan Africa. Reporter Gift Ageriga from Abuja, Nigeria, recently visited some fistula treatment centers in northern Nigeria and brings us this report.
Obstetric fistula, also known as vesicovaginal fistula, is an abnormal hole between the bladder or rectum and a woman's vagina. A fistula can allow continuous and uncontrollable leakage of urine or feces. The result is that victims often become isolated and abandoned. The United Nations Population Fund says about 50,000 to 100,000 women worldwide suffer an obstetric fistula each year as they give birth. And Nigeria accounts for nearly 40% of those cases. Dr. Stephen Baturi is a fistula surgeon and consulting gynecologist at Baraudiko Teaching Hospital in Nigeria's Kaduna State.
I will not say that the incidence has been reported to be reducing in spite of the fears that are going on around the country. There are new emerging UVF cases that we see now and then. The reasons are not far-fetched. Early marriages and early childbirth, obstructed labor, especially in northern Nigeria and some parts of southern Nigeria.
He also said that other major causes of fistula include older men having sex with minors and female genital mutilation. A visit to some of the fistula centers in northern Nigeria reveals a high number of teenage patients. Amina Mohammed and Arira and Asia Ahmed are three fistula victims. 17-year-old Amina Mohammed is happy with the results of her recent surgery. Amina says when she had a long labor and by the time the local midwives decided to take her to the hospital, it was too late. Arira says she suffered a fistula when she was 15 and went through a long labor while under the care of badly trained medical practitioners. Asia says when she arrived here at the fistula center, she thought she couldn't be healed. But when she saw other cases that were worse than hers, she decided to leave everything to God. She says now that she is well and pregnant, she is back here to give birth because she doesn't want to experience what happened before. Dr. Adamu Husseina is the principal medical officer at the Gambo Sawaba Fistula Center, Zaria. She says treatment is free, but most patients still find it difficult to come for treatment. She blames poverty and the social problems that come with the injury.
In most cases, some of the patients are abandoned by their relations. They don't want to associate with them. Imagine somebody sitting down, wherever the person sits, he's going to wait the place with urine. Some of them that do not keep themselves properly, maybe they have poor hygiene. You see flies following them. So they are psychologically disturbed. In the society, they are seen as outcasts. They have functions, they cannot go, because if they go there, they'll become objects of ridicule.
Nigerian's Ministry of Health estimates that 98% of fistula cases go untreated, even though about 3,000 surgeries are performed each year. Dr. Husseina urges the government to increase funding for the health sector and to address all factors from poverty to early childbearing, which contribute to this problem for women, especially young girls. For VOA, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
Hundreds of Ethiopian soldiers marched to the Prime Minister's palace in Addis Ababa today to demand pay raises. Their presence sparked rumors of potential military action in the capital and fears for the safety of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. But within a short time, the fears were calmed when the unarmed troops peacefully left after meeting with Abiy. Abiy took office earlier this year. He has led dramatic reforms in the country, freeing hundreds of political prisoners, enacting a peace agreement that ends two decades of hostilities with neighboring Eritrea, and opening up greater space for political dissent.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to Straight Talk Africa coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Afori, and our engineer, Skip Sisk, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical jam. I guarantee.
VOA News.
When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria kills thousands of people each year, but there are some simple things you can do to protect your family. If you can, put screens in your windows. A simple screen can keep disease-carrying mosquitoes out of your home. If you go outside, wear light-colored clothing and long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. After it rains, empty all containers of standing water. The water in just one discarded tire can become a breeding ground for thousands of mosquitoes. Make sure your home is clear of debris and anything that holds water, including discarded cans, water containers, and rubbish. Empty containers that livestock drink from regularly so that mosquitoes cannot breed there.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for VOA's discussion program, Reporters Roundtable, every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas and take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA.